Blog Talk Radio.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I am just a man, when you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be.
Well, good evening and happy Shabbat to one and all. Kirk and I are with you this evening. JB is celebrating his anniversary with his bride. Happy anniversary, JB. First thing I want to do is once again direct our listeners' attention to the new website, Yada Yarwa. I now presented in the new look of our books with the new script, the Lion of Judah, the white, gold, and blue theme throughout is now up. It's directly linked to, so you can type in yadaya.com or yadayawa.com. Even Questioning Paul now will go to it. And it has all 15 or 16 of the rewritten books from In the Beginning, The Story of Man, and The Covenant, and Invitations, which are the first four volumes now of Yada Yawa. We're about halfway through Mikre, Meetings, which will be volume 5 of Yada Yawa. We also have one of an Introduction to God series called Written in Stone. And then there's 5 volumes of Observations from Perspective, Covenant, Growing, Teaching, and Understanding. Those books begin with the Proverbs on a family relationship, and they migrate through the first about 20 chapters of the book of Yeshaya Isaiah. And then the 2 volumes of Coming Home, which go through the first, I think it's 23 or 24 Mizmor Psalms. It's a real awakening, a fundamental landscape change in the way that we viewed Yahweh's message, in the sense that the central figure in God's story is Dode. He is the Messiah, the Son of God, the King of Kings, the Chosen One, his firstborn shepherd. He is the one who will be returning with Yahweh. He's the most extraordinary individual who ever lived, and he is the center of God's focus. And then now there are 4 volumes of Questioning Paul, Liar's Lie, Torahless, Devil's Advocate, and Incredible. And thanks to both Jackie and the edit team, from JK to Mike to Molly, we have now have a final chapter, the chapter that we have been reviewing. I added it to Questioning Paul since it is so condemning of the Christian New Testament. And so when we return to that this evening, for those that want to follow along, it's now the final chapter of Incredible, Volume 4 of Questioning Paul. And if you click on it on the bookshelf and you go down to the 7th chapter, which is called The Death of Religion, you'll find specifically what we're talking about. And it's a marvelous site because every book, it tells you what page you're on in the book. You can go between the various chapters, clicking directly to them. You can actually see the book from its cover, front cover, spine, back cover, read everything that is there, including the prologues. And then from this site, go to all of our podcasts, all categorized to the community of people supporting Yahweh's message, even to the books as they are available in printed form at Amazon and in the Kindle format in Amazon. I think in the Kindle format at Amazon, where you can purchase all 16 volumes. You know, these are not short volumes. They're average about 600 pages a piece. So 16 volumes, it's 600 pages a piece, and the cost is $14.85.
That's amazing.
Wow. I would say that's probably
I can afford that.
Yeah, I tell you, that's pretty unbelievable. Speaking of unbelievable, you know how Portland became the poster child for we don't want any more of them. There are police that the police are racist, and the police are this, that, and the other, and we're just going to have the summer of love in Portland, and we're going to allow the protesters to establish their own community, of course, which is nothing really now than a drug and arson community. Just want to give you an update. Homicides this year, now that there aren't no policing in downtown Portland, they're up 533%. Shootings, of course, which they were trying to eliminate by eliminating the cops, have increased 126%. So it's working out really well for the people of Portland. Sad situation, I'm sure you've heard, but in Surfside, Florida, a building that collapsed there. It's a fairly heavily Jewish community. Of the 99 people that are missing, likely under the rubble, 20 of them are Jewish. I did wonder why in America you would find a 20-some-odd story building that would just crumble. It almost looks like it was part of one of those.
It looks Beirut to me.
Yeah. Well, no, because there's nothing twisted there.
No, when they blew it up, do you remember?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. And Beirut, it's all this twisted structures of rubble that is left here, and just nothing but dust. It was kind of like the World Trade Center. They just went down. A study from researchers at the Florida International University published last year found that the building had been sinking at a rate of 2 millimeters per year, which is not particularly good structurally, obviously. The author also said that the building was constructed on reclaimed wetland, which is, you know, a considerable amount of Florida, which is, of course, a concern because as the organic material over time it degrades, it the land slips.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of not so good, I came on in very early 2020, right after we heard about the outbreak of the coronavirus. And based upon research that Leah, my wife, and I had done, we came to the conclusion that it was highly likely that the coronavirus emerged in the Wuhan Virology Institute, and that it was a combination of deliberate and an accident. We learned that there was irrefutable evidence that the Institute was doing what the rest of the world, particularly the United States, had banned, which was gain-of-function research on viruses. Gain-of-function means that you make the viruses either more effective in transmission or more effective in replicating, or you make them more effective in jumping from one species to another. We also reported that the National Institute of Health had funded the lab to the point if we use Fauci's number, $3.7 million. I've seen other numbers that are as low as, say, $800,000. They range anywhere in between. And we said that there was no question that that had happened while Fauci was in charge, because the research papers, peer research papers that were published out of the Wuhan Institute, credit the National Institute of Health in the United States for the funding for their research. And it has subsequently been disclosed. Even Trump tried to stop it. Fauci, of course, tried not to stop it. And we now have Senator Rand Paul correctly accusing Fauci of the funding, and even the Washington Post giving Fauci a number of Pinocchios for his evasive answers. We also, what we learned in our initial research, and, you know, 4 million people around the world have died of the COVID-19 virus. And so this is a really significant event. It has not just killed 4 million people worldwide, it has ransacked the world's economies. And the lingering cost of it is far greater than the published cost, which is it has destroyed economies and destroyed supply lines, destroyed people's character, caused untold domestic violence, a huge increase in psychological issues. You almost can't fathom the side consequences, drug abuse, alcoholism. And even things like, for example, on the world's most important construction commodities, wood, steel, things like that, they're up 3 to 4 times in price, and you just can't get them. I can hardly buy wood. And when you can buy it, it's the price is just shocking. As I say, 3 to 4 times increase. And it's true on commodities now around the world, because we had nincompoops shut down and try to manage the economy as if they were communist dictators, and then deprive people of their freedoms once again as if they were communist dictators. One of the things that I said at the time was that it was obvious that bats, having both, actually all three, Ebola as a virus, HIV virus, and the SARS virus, had been brought into the lab, and they had infected one another, and that you got a mutated strain that contained elements of all three viruses, which is why it had such a harsh effect on people's cardiovascular systems as well as their pulmonary systems. That is all proven fact. Now, the other part of this that is interesting is that we said that there was absolutely no evidence linking the wet market, that the first cases are traceable to the virology laboratory where they did not adhere to protocol. There's a gazillion pictures now that show this, and they weren't wearing their hazmat type suits, but were just in there in typical lab coats and handling bats, and an infected bat infected a person, and that person then infected other people. And well, at this point, what we know for certain is that the first cases have nothing to do with the wet market, that the first cases do tie back to the Wuhan virology laboratory, that the laboratory was doing gain-of-function research, that the United States was funding that research, and that there was an accident in the lab, and that the communist government of China deliberately destroyed the evidence. deliberately, purposefully, knowingly destroyed the evidence that, had it been made available, may well have saved 4 million lives and the economies of the world. Now, if you would like to come up with a reasonable explanation for why the communist government of China would deliberately and knowingly destroy all of the evidence about the virus in its early stages that doesn't include complicity in developing that virus, I'm all ears. Because the fact of the matter is, there is no other motivation, there is no other rational explanation. And it's rather astonishing that we have so few people just acknowledging the truth. Now, at this point, the world has fundamentally changed as it relates to the scientific community, because science ain't science anymore. It's more politics now than it is science. And academicians are almost universally liberal. For example, at Stanford, there was a case just published last week that said that Jewish professors there found the workplace intolerable because of the BDS movement and the anti-Semitism. The college environment has become, in, among professors, a singular mindset. It's like the social media police in this country. It is a singular mindset, and it is the far extreme of liberalism. And in that environment, the scientists that came out all wanting to keep their jobs, all wanting to be respected among their peers, all denounced the initial findings that it was the communist government of China that was responsible for this. Well, they were wrong. And they know they're wrong now. And there's lots of backtracking and people saying we need to do more research into this. We actually need to figure this out, because it is absolutely certain it had nothing to do with the wet market, that it did emerge sooner, and that the communist government did, in fact, those are facts. And it's also factual that the Wuhan lab was doing gain of function research, and that the United States was funded. Now, those are really damning facts when 4 million people are dead around the world, and that we fundamentally changed the way that we view our fundamental rights of freedom and freedom of expression. And there were shows that we did that were deleted from YouTube because it was deemed that violated their standards on vaccines, when in fact I was
only one preaching.
Vaccinated myself. My wife is vaccinated. We tell everybody that will listen, please get vaccinated. We're incredibly pro-vaccine and have gone so far as to say that just as there were cases brought against those who had HIV and had contact with others in a way that passed on the virus and did not warn them about it, that they were later sued and lost to those who claimed deprivations of freedoms and health and degradation of health. And in fact, if they died, manslaughter. I said the same thing about coronavirus. You got every right to not get vaccinated. You've got every right to get the virus, but you don't have a right to pass it on and kill somebody else. And so that is my view on it. And of course, I'm anti-conspiracies. I'm going to label things that are conspiracies, the anti-vax nincompoops that think that the government's trying to track them, are dunderheads. The government have no reason to track somebody whose lives are as miserable as these individuals. So I wanted to share that we now know that what Leah and I found and communicated on this program now a year and 6 months ago was accurate, and it's being confirmed every day. There was a study that just came out this week from Great Britain that actually used a tracking mechanism to prove that the by the time that it was in the wet market, that it had already mutated, and that it did not emerge there, and it proved that none of the earliest reported cases had any contact with the wet market. The unrelated issue to this, we have what is probably now the world's leading expert on SARS-related viruses, having now come out after he had written a letter initially, of course, the science of it all, saying that, no, this came from the wet market. It had nothing to do with the lab, and that, you know, you guys are creating conspiracies out of thin air, saying, not so fast. What I had written was untrue. It did not come out of the wet market. The lab happens to be the best explanation for what has happened to us. Anthony Fauci has become quite the politico. Turns out that when Donald Trump found out that he had authorized additional hundreds of thousands of dollars to go to the Wuhan Institute of Virology, even after the outbreak of the virus, and Trump said, cancel it, Fauci says, no, I don't want to do that. You know, there's no technical grounds for canceling such research. We made a commitment that we're going to pay it, and it was $369,819, which is the balance of the $220 grant. And Trump says, give a damn what you think. Cancel it. And Fauci had a conniption fit, and somebody that was one of his colleagues says, well, you should threaten to resign over it. And Fauci says, you want me to resign over a lousy $3.7 million? No way. Fauci is now saying that any criticism of him is an attack on science. So I guess he is now the epitome of science in America, and that, yes, he is. When the New York Times writer Kara Swishers did a podcast with him, he says that any attack on him, you are actually criticizing science and not him. Listen, there is there once upon a time in a land far, far away, science was science and politics was politics. That land no longer exists. That time no longer exists. The scientific community has become exceedingly political and is used by politicians, and they themselves are political. And so what you saw with Fauci is a constantly changing scenario where I don't think he was ever right. And that's hard. And it's hard when you're making so many pronouncements to never be right. But that was nonetheless his situation. Now, speaking of never being right, there is a news out of Canada that 600 unmarked graves were found at a former residential school for Indigenous children. This is a right after last month, there's a report of 215 bodies found at another school. Some of these bodies are children as young as 2 and 3 years old. I'll give you one guess. I'll give you two, just your second one doesn't count, on who ran the school and was responsible for the deaths of those children and their burials, and then the subsequent removal of the gravestones as evidence.
Catholic school.
May I have your answer, please? Did you say the Roman Catholic Church? That would be a winner. That would be a winner. The Roman Catholic Church operated the school. subsequently removed the markers so that they could destroy the evidence. People that were there said the nuns were exceedingly mean to us. We had to learn how the Roman Catholic Church hated us, even when we said their own little blessings. The nuns were condemning about our people and inflicted pain on us. Pope Francis, however, he expressed his pain over the discovery and pressed religions and political authorities to shed light on this sad affair. I want you to read your own damn archives and know how your nuns and your priests murdered these 800 children. What a despicable organization. If you are a Roman Catholic, you are immoral, you are ignorant, you're irrational, you're just disgusting. Absolutely reprehensible for this church to even exist today. I lived for a while in Ohio, outside of Cincinnati. And one of the things that I reported constantly was how much I was distraught by the overwhelming presence of Roman Catholicism in Cincinnati. Well, it has struck once again. Roman Catholic priests who victimized children can no longer be prosecuted, despite a new law eliminating the statutes of limitations for child abuse. The state attorney general says the law now releases hundreds of Catholic priests who have many, many hundreds of credible cases being brought against them because of a technicality in missing the deadline to report. It is sad what we do politically to protect this disgusting organization. Speaking of disgusting, during a House Education and Labor Committee hearing on the priorities of the Department of Education, Representative Mary Miller, she is a Republican from Illinois. She asked She asked the Education Secretary Miguel Cardona about an education material that was disseminated to students and their families and titled Confronting LGBTQI plus. I know L is for lesbian, right? G is for gay. I mean, I don't know why you need lesbian and gay. Why don't we just say homosexual? Why don't we just have H? But we don't. We have lesbian, gay, bisexual, of course, transgender. Boy, that's really confused. Queer. Now, I don't know what the difference is between queer and transgender and bisexual and gay and lesbian, but nonetheless, this queer. And I had thought that if you use the term queer, that you were being some kind of a bigot. Yeah, if you said, "Oh, queer," you're a queer. That was saying something you're not supposed to say. But they're applying the label to themselves. And I, what is I for?
I have no idea.
Plus, anyway, so this was confronting anti-LGBTQI plus harassment in schools. We got the plus, so we can be fully inclusive. Miller highlighted one of the examples of harassment listed in the material, which depicted a teacher. This is harassment now. A teacher telling a student who identifies as non-binary that there are only two genders. So this is a student that identifies as non-binary that there are only two genders. And this teacher now was listed as an example of somebody that was harassing students. So it is harassing to say there are two genders. Now, it's true. There are more than two genders. there's male, there's female, and confused. There, you could also say there's male, female, and liberal. So there are three genders. We now know that for a fact. But if you were, since this is supposed to be the party of science, you might want to tell the party of science that genuinely, apart from our humor here, there are only two genders and people. I understand there's some, you know, some weird things that take place and some frogs and other kinds of little critters out there where they morph from male to female and they can do them. So I don't know how it all works. But nonetheless, this wasn't a school setting. This was a student. This was, I'm assuming that we're okay using the term human. I don't know if that's a pejorative or not, but this was a human who was offended that she was told there are only two genders of humans. So before we start penalizing teachers on this, the congresswoman said, stating a genetic and biological fact about genders, can you please clarify for the committee, Secretary of Education, how many genders there are? So I know what you're asking, but I'm not going to get to the root of what you're asking. Responded, dodging the question. I feel very strongly that as educators, it is our responsibility to protect all students. Wait a minute. You're an educator, protect students from answers? Is that what you're trying to protect them from? You want to protect them from truth. We're going to protect them from knowledge. I think as an educator, that should be our primary responsibility, is to protect children from telling them the truth. There was another bit of news out.
Wow.
Yes, I have gone out of my way to tell our listeners how disgusted I am by Rudy Giuliani. And when he came out with his comments on Islam following 9/11, the man did more damage to this country and to the world than almost as much by running interference for fundamentalist Muslims as the terrorists did themselves. Giuliani, however, has had his license to practice law in New York revoked. And it's not because of something he did with a client. It's not for a breach of any legal statute. It's not for malfeasance in a courtroom. It's not. It has nothing to do with his practice as an attorney. And attorneys are, on rare occasions, suspended for grossly inappropriate actions that harm their clients or undermine the integrity of the courts. Giuliani didn't do any of those things. Cases resulting in immediate suspension also apply to attorneys who have substance abuse problems, serious criminal convictions, or who steal their clients' money. Giuliani didn't do any of those things. But yet, he had New York, which is now left of Karl Marx politically, where the judicial system in New York is no longer a judicial system. It is a political circus that Karl Marx would think is probably too liberal. And they wrote that Giuliani's decision is a reminder to the bar that a lawyer's responsibility to act with integrity and honesty extends beyond the courtroom to any situation where a third person may be influenced or harmed. The judges made it clear that if Giuliani, acting as the president's personal lawyer, willfully used fraud and deceit to undermine the election, the repercussions would be severe. He was expressing a political conclusion, and that is now illegal for a lawyer?
Freedom of speech has went down the road.
Whoa! I don't want to go into this program on the fraud that took place in the last election because the left is apoplectic about saying, see, the court said there's no fraud. Actually, the court didn't hear a single case. And the liberals are saying, no, the court's already decided this. There was no fraud. No, the court didn't hear a single case. every case that was brought before them, they had reasons for saying, I don't want to hear the case. Like, you have no standing in this case. And so, no, the courts didn't decide anything in this regard. And just like the communists in China, all the evidence has subsequently been destroyed. Researchers are now rewriting the story of human evolution. The analysis that is that the Neanderthals were far more closely related to Homo sapiens than it was previously thought. The fact there have been two quasi-Neanderthals, quasi-Homo sapiens, that have been found in the last few weeks. One of them in the Dragon Valley in China, called Dragon Man, and another in a dig that took place outside of Tel Aviv for a concrete factory. I don't know if they're calling it a concrete man or not. But two things that we learned. One is that Concrete Man was stocky, strong, and had a brain the same size as ours, maybe a little larger than ours. There is no way, using evolution as the model, that Concrete Man or Dragon Man, whichever your preferred title might be, should have failed, and that Homo sapiens, which have smaller brains and are weaker, succeeded.
Yeah,
something to think about. Yeah. Also, this myth that Homo sapiens fought against Neanderthals worldwide and wiped them out, and there's no crossbreeding between the two of them. Not so true, because the oldest variation of Neanderthals is found now in Israel, at least 20,000 years before Neanderthals are found anyplace else. And they migrated from Israel, where they lived in close contact with, and there are now a new intermediate species of Neanderthal Homo sapiens that have been found. It is my opinion that the single most despicable building in the world is the Colosseum in Rome. So I was reading an article. It was CNN Travel that published this article. The article began, "The Colosseum was built by the Emperor Vespasian, with construction starting in 72 BCE, ending 8 years later." You're a historian, Kirk. What's wrong with that statement?
Well, there was he did it with Jewish. I mean, with
BCE. Vespasian became emperor around 69, right after Nero's death. Nero died in 69.
Yeah, that's wrong side of the question.
Oh, yeah, wrong side of the ledger there, dude. Vespasian became emperor with the Nero suicide. Nero committed suicide around 69, sometime in 69. So Vespasian became emperor shortly thereafter, because that's the way the Romans ruled. The link between Vespasian and his son Titus, because the next line is his son Titus inaugurated the Colosseum with 100 days of games, which included mock naval battles, execution of animals, and gladiatorial combat, according to the ancient historian Eutropius. 5,000 animals were killed during those inaugural games. So guess what the article doesn't mention? That the Colosseum was designed by and built by Jewish slaves that were hauled off after the Titus and Vespasian ransacked the province of Yehuda, showing that they had control over the province of Yehuda, which they also had total control over in 33, because it was the Romans that nailed Yosha, Christian Jesus, to their crucifixion stake. And it also is that the monies that Rome stole from the temple was used to finance the construction of the Colosseum. And so you took the most magnificent and meaningful building in the world, Yahweh's home, in Jerusalem. And you built the house of celebrating pagan gods and of torturous death and cruelty. And the article was saying, oh, the archaeologists and restorers, the engineers and architects have worked diligently to bring this landmark back to its former glory.
Gosh.
What in the hell is wrong with us? All right, I'd like to return to where we were a week ago on our text. I had just read this from Acts, and without rereading this from Acts, it'll be hard to understand our rebuttal against it. It is on page 37 of 137 of the chapter 7 now, The Death of Religion, in volume 4 of Questioning Paul, which, as I said, is available at yada yada. This is now what Luke claims Shimon Peter said. Gentlemen, brothers, it is possible, after all, to say to you in open discourse, enjoin freedom of speech with regard to and concerning the patriarch David, Daoud in Greek, that he both died and was buried, and his tomb exists among us even until this day. For Jesus to live, David must die. For Jesus to be the Messiah, David must have that title taken from him. For Jesus to be considered the Son of God, what Yahweh said of his son, David, has to be misappropriated. And so, recognizing that the Passover lamb does not come back to life, instead, they would bury David. This is the birth of replacement theology. All promises that Yahweh made to Daoud and to Yisrael were misappropriated. Mm-hmm. By Christianity. And if it were not for that misappropriation, there would be nothing to Christianity, because their Christ would no longer be a Messiah, and he wasn't one. He would not be the Son of God. He was not that either.
Mm-hmm.
He would have been the Passover lamb, and he would not be returning. That belongs to Daoud as well. And all of the many, 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 many promises that Yahweh made to Israel would still be intact on behalf of Israel. Being therefore a prophet, and knowing that theos, an oath, that from out of the fruit of his loins would sit upon his throne, he foresaw and spoke about the rising up and standing upright of the Christu, because namely, he was not left behind and abandoned so as to remain at Hades, nor did his flesh decay and decompose. Daoud was a prophet. Therefore, what he wrote is true. And because he was a prophet of Yahweh, Christianity has no basis, because it is Daoud that refers to Paul as the father of lies and the son of evil. The arguments that Daoud brings against his adversaries are actually named in the adversary, and that name is Shaul, Paul.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in this particular case, and we will prove it here in a moment, it does not say fruit of his loins. It's actually a minuscule speck, a tiny aspect, a tiny particle of what Daoud was, is being reconstituted upon Daoud's second coming, DNA.
Mm-hmm.
It's not semen. I did the math saying that if your claim to usurping all of the promises that Yahweh made to Dode is sperm, then it's diluted, and the numbers are just staggering. By the time you go through the generations as to how little Dode
would be there.
There would be. It's just appalling. And I actually did, too, the true chronologies of the conflicting chronologies that exist. And they're different by every possible way, including the number of generations by a lot. And neither one are even remotely accurate. Those bozos were absolutely clueless. But that's not what it says. And by the way, he did not speak. That prophecy was not from Dode. Newsflash, Shamuel, second book of Shamuel, chapter 7, is not a Dodean prophecy. Dode didn't speak a word of the prophecy. Do you know who the prophet was?
Samuel.
Nathan.
Oh, Nathan, the follower of Samuel.
Spoke to Nathan.
Right. Yeah.
So just to say that, he was a prophet, and this is what he said about Christu. Are you guys going to be idiots? The prophecy was spoken through Nathan. Not Dode. And I'll give anybody $1 billion if they can find in 2 Samuel 7, which is where this alleged seed is spoken of, I'll give you $1 billion if you can find a Christu there, or a Christone, or a Christus, or any such thing, a Christ, a Jesus, Iusun. You find any one of them there, find a Yosha there, I'll give you $1 billion.
You won't find any of them.
Yeah.
They ain't there.
Good luck with that.
Yeah.
So it doesn't say that upon his throne he foresaw and spoke about the rising up and standing up of the Christon. Further, I'm sorry, but Yahweh's soul, not Christon, is the one that was taken into Sheol. It had nothing to do with Iusun, Christo, Christus, Christ. He didn't go to Sheol. And God makes it really clear that he fulfilled the promise of Passover by placing his nephesh soul into Yosha, and that the set-apart spirit took Yosha's soul at the conclusion of Passover into Sheol. And it was Yahweh's nephesh soul as an avatar, as a probe, that endured that separation. And then it was the set-apart spirit that once again retrieved Yahweh's soul to fulfill Bukurim. Mm-hmm. Had nothing to do with Yosha. Yosha is really important. He was the Passover lamb. There is not a single word in any of this testimony about Yosha fulfilling the role of a Passover lamb. There's no mention of Yosha's name, and there is not a single mention of him fulfilling the role of the Passover lamb, which is the only thing relevant. And oh, by the way, that he wouldn't suffer pain, that he wouldn't be forsaken or deserted, that his flesh did not decay. His flesh ceased to exist.
Mm-hmm.
His flesh was meaningless. It was a symbol. Yes. To Yahweh, who is spirit, and to Yahweh's nephesh, which is consciousness, the physical body was as useless, in fact, far more useless than any other Passover lamb. far more useless. Why? Because any other Passover lamb would have fed the people. This was just a symbol. And it was destroyed that night. Thank God it was destroyed. Can you imagine God saying, hey, you know, I let them rip the flesh off my back and off my my legs with their whips that had the metal barbs in them that not only with the force bruised my body to the bone, but literally ripped the flesh off of my body. And then I had every upper body bone dislocated because they drove nails into my wrists and my feet, and they tortured me under the most excruciating form of torture. And it's that body that I want to bring back as a symbol. And oh, by the way, I want you to keep me nailed to that damn stick, showing me dead. There is no part of this that's even remotely accurate. And if this isn't accurate, and this is Shimon Kefesh, there's only one person in that era who could even be considered in the league of Shimon Kefesh, and that'd be Yahu Khan. That's it. If the words of Shimon Kefesh are unreliable, then there is nothing of Christianity that is reliable. If the book of Acts is unreliable, and this is an outright lie, then what's left?
Nothing.
Yeah, you don't have the foundation of your religion. It all goes away. All you got left is Paul's letters, which are contradictory and insane, the drivel of a demon-possessed man. Well, it's hard to believe that they were this overtly committed to killing and burying David. There is likely nothing in all the universe that they could have said that would have irritated his father more. And his father just happens to be God Almighty. This is Paul's plot, one which Luke advanced by ascribing it to Peter. But every word of it is a lie, from the smallest details to its sweeping implications, as I shared a week ago. Even on the small points, Abraham, Yitzhak, and Jacob, they've always been the forefathers, the patriarchs of Israel. Dodd was not a patriarch. Dodd's the son of God, the king of Israel, and the Messiah, none of which apply to Yosha, as is claimed by Luke or Paul. Kirk, yesterday was one of the most inspiring and difficult days I've ever had translating. I was translating Yeshaya 55 for the third chapter on Teruah, because Yeshaya 55, 56, 57, and the beginning of 58 are a prelude to Teruah. And in Yeshaya 55, it's devoted to Dodd and Dodd's return, and to someone who Yahweh deploys to awaken his people with that message. And it was something I translated. I had to walk away from it. I translated. I walk away from it. I said, did I get this correct? Walk away from it. And then said, well, I'm just going to write. This is what the words say. Let's deal with it. But in the words of Yeshaya, inspired by Yahweh, it's Dodd who's returning. And in fact, God goes so far as to say that if you want to understand what I'm offering, if you want to understand me, if you want to benefit from any of this, then you need to understand that what I'm offering you is what I offer to. Well, what did he offer Dodd? He called him his son. I'm good with that. I'm good with that.
What he's saying is, if you come
to agree with this and accept this and understand my relationship with those, I'm offering you the same thing. We become royalty. We become the children of God. We're anointed by him, both in oil and in spirit. Enriched and empowered, we can speak for him as even prophets. It's the greatest promotion ever. And so when I read this and I see these nincompoops trying to steal from Dode, they have no idea that here's Yahweh saying that if you come to understand who I am and what I'm offering, I will do for you what I did for Dode. And these nincompoops, rather than saying, yes, are saying, no, why don't we just bury Dode, let him flesh rot and decompose, and that'll really be good. Then I guess if God's going to give us what he gave to Dode, then we should expect the same. Yes, Dode's the son of God, the king of Israel and the Messiah, none of which apply to Yosha was claimed by Luke and Paul. Moreover, the location of Dode's tomb, other than to tell you that it's somewhere within the 12 acres which would have comprised the city of Dode, it remains unknown. And it remains unknown for, guess what, a really good reason.
To make it a shrine.
Yeah. The last thing that God wants is somebody worshiping a person. We ought to be. You want to get
Dode
to know Dode?
Yellow.
Go read his Mizmor, his Psalms. Go read the Proverbs.
Yeah, yeah.
Go study his life. Go find out what Yahweh said to him and about him and did with him and what he promised him and what that means to us and what the prophets had to say about him. That is like infinitely better than going and sitting by his grave. Because, oh, by the way, Dode ain't in that grave.
Go ahead. Everything is Dode is gone. That's
correct.
His soul. Yeah.
According to Yahweh, Dode's soul was put in a sleep-like state. He tells us that several times, so I'm going to believe him. Awaiting his reawakening prior to his glorious return, his nephesh most certainly is not dead. Moreover, the prophecy was unequivocally about Dode's soul, idiots, not his physical body. As Luke and Paul are insisting. We shared this last week, but remember, it reads, by way of contrast, you will not abandon your association with my nephesh soul.
Oh.
With regard to Shaul, never allowing your set-apart one to see corruption or degradation. Mizmor 16:10. Therefore, Paul and Luke's argument was predicated on a false premise and then based upon a citation that does not apply, which they then misappropriated and misquoted. So how do you like the play so far, Mrs. Lincoln? And this is just the hypothesis stage of their delusion. The prophecy in 2 Samuel 7, to which Luke is alluding, does not predict the arrival of a Messiah who would be known as a Christon Christ. It does not speak of Yosha or of Jesus. Instead, just like the misappropriated Psalm, 2 Samuel 7 is about Dode and only about the beloved from beginning to end. Sometimes you have to read things from beginning to end, and now we're talking about in the middle. Just a clue. This sweeping prophecy opens with Yah explicitly speaking to Dode. By the way, you know, last week I was told at the end of the show, boy, you were really wound up and giving them both barrels. You know, that's I don't know. You know, but most people said, I'm glad you're doing it.
Oh, somebody didn't like it?
So I'm translating. I'm sitting here translating Yahweh's depiction of how we should fulfill Teruah. And for us, Kirk, every day is Teruah.
Mm-hmm.
We live Teruah. Shout out a warning and sing for joy. Share Yahweh's plan of reconciliation while warning people that they are headed to their own demise. And the terms that Yahweh uses as he describes it are to scream at the top of your lungs, to show some passion for what you're saying, that time is short. The message is being drowned out by the volume of human malfeasance and of everybody, you know, from cancel culture to political correctness to multinationalism to Black Lives Matter, everybody having an agenda that has no basis in truth, and they all have big microphones. And God says, shout it so they can hear it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we're in doing the right thing and being passionate.
Absolutely.
About this.
No
problem at
all.
We care. The fact of the matter is, I do care that the Roman Catholic Church has tortured and murdered hundreds of thousands, probably millions of little children.
Millions is more likely.
Yeah.
Yes.
I care. I care that there's 4 million people dead today because the Chinese government got caught doing something that was horrendous and then covered up the evidence and then blamed everybody else. I care. You should care. Now, the sweeping prophecy in 2 Samuel 7 is one that that I started on. It's the first prophecy that I dealt with 21 years ago, Kirk. It's where Asher led me to pull all of these books, all these books and all these shows. It's right there in the middle of it. And you know, I have translated that passage for every series that we have done, and sometimes two and three times in the series. And each time, something is triggered that says, oh, wow, I get it now. And I'm going to share this with you this time with fresh eyes. And sometimes it takes learning something that doesn't seem to relate to understand what God is saying. And in this particular case, the insight came from Mike. I told the listeners that Mike was taking a fairly plain reading of what it's fine to take a plain reading of what Yahweh was saying about the timing of Bukhurim, and where the English translations are all the day after the Shabbat from a car, but that's not what a car means. And when I figured out what a car actually means, its verbal root, I came to a different conclusion about what Yahweh was saying about this the timing and the warning that God was giving us. And it's that word that is pivotal in our understanding of 2 Samuel 7. The other thing is pivotal is to appreciate when Yahweh is giving a prophecy about Dodan in particular.
Mm-hmm.
He will speak to him and then of him. And so the big frustration or the big challenge that people have in the prophecy is it changes from you with Yahweh speaking to Dodan in second person to he with Yahweh referring mm-hmm. to Dodan in third person. And then it comes full circle right back around to Yahweh speaking to Dodan in second person. And so people, I can't understand that. But it's really simple. Dodan brought up something that he felt all upset about, which was, I was out there in a tent, and I got this beautiful Alpha Cedar, and God should have been in an earful. Wait a minute, I never told you. Come on, pal. You got this wrong, pal. You're my bud, but come on, you really got this one screwed up. And then after he lays him low on saying, you know, come on, you're just not thinking here. Then Yahweh says what he's going to do through him. And in the midst of it, he tells us about him. and then he returns to communicating directly to Dode again. Makes perfect sense. So the sweeping prophecy opens with Yahweh explicitly speaking to Dode. And then it concludes with God directly addressing Dode once again. And again, if you want to understand the middle, it's a really good idea to consider the beginning and the end. In the middle, Yahweh speaks to us of Dode. Why? Because he's the single most important person in God's entire story. And if you wanted to make a religion, dumb, really dumb idea, but if you wanted to make a religion, the guy to make the religion over it would be Dode. He's everything. He's everything and more that has been falsely ascribed to Jesus. Dode had a very simple father-son relationship with God, and I would advise to accept that. Other than the conduit of this proclamation, it was Dathan, something I guess that Luke, by not having read the beginning, was unaware of. Yeah. Yep. And the one offering it, Yahweh, his name is mentioned. No other name is mentioned in the entirety of the prophecy. Nathan's, because he's the one that Yahweh is speaking through the prophet. Dode, he's the one being spoken to and about. And Yahweh, he's the one that is speaking. Those are the only three names. The only thing which changes as we move through the prophecy is the audience. At times, Yahweh is speaking to us of Dode, and at others, God is speaking directly to his son. When you arrive at this transition in the 12th statement, this perspective will help all of us appreciate why God goes from referring to Dode as you and then speaks of he when he, Yahweh, is speaking to us about God's return to you and occurs at the conclusion of the 14th statement. All right, I'm going to read this, feel free to interrupt it anytime. This is probably the most important prophecy in the now 20-year history of Yada Yah.
Wow.
It's without this prophecy, there is no Yada Yah. This is how we began. And it shows our growth and understanding how it has evolved over time. By evolving, it has grown. It came to pass when the king sat down and relaxed in his home, because Yahweh had given him a comforting respite from his adversaries, that the king said to Nathan, the prophet, that's enough to destroy the citation.
Hold on.
And the books of Acts. Yep. Sorry about that, pals. But facts are facts. Please look around. I live in a house of cedar, but the ark of God sits within curtains. 2 Samuel 7:2. And one and two. So Nathan said to the king, choose to go and do what is in your best judgment for Yahweh. But then that evening it came to be that the word of Yahweh came to Nathan. And he conveyed, go and tell, this is the only other name now in this prophecy. We have Nathan, we have Yahweh, and now we have Dode. Go tell Dode, my coworker, that this is what Yahweh says. Why should you build me a house to live in? By the way, that is so profound. Why? Because sons are not responsible for building a house for their dads. Dads are responsible for building homes for their family.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, and so God's saying, what's wrong with you? Don't you understand our relationship? Indeed. I mean,
almost, yeah.
This is really simple stuff, but it goes right to the core of what the covenant represents. And so when Dode got the covenant wrong, And this is the beauty of Yahweh. Here's the most articulate, the most brilliant man in human history. This is God's firstborn son, his chosen one, a prophet.
Messiah.
Yeah.
From the Messiah, the King of Kings, the Shepherd. He is everything, and yet he was wrong. Don't you love it?
Yeah.
I do. I love it. Why should you build me a home
well
to live in? Yeah, no answer for that one, pal, because you were wrong. Indeed. I have not, God just goes right back in here. I just love this. Indeed, I have not lived in any house since the time that I lifted the children of Israel out of the crucibles of oppression and Mitzrayim. Even to this day, I have existed going about in a tent dwelling, which, by the way, ought to tell you something about God.
Yeah.
We aren't going to impress him by building a giant cathedral.
Yes.
He doesn't want us to build him a house. Thank you. Anywhere along the way that I have journeyed with the children of Israel, did I say a single word to any of the tribes of Israel, my people, Israel, whom I fed, asking, why don't you build me a house of cedar? Therefore, say to my associate, Dode, this is what Yahweh of the spiritual implement says. I took you from the sheepfolds, from chasing after lambies, to being the leader of my people over Israel. Oh, by the way, if you're a Roman Catholic, I don't see Roman Catholic.
No.
If you're a Protestant Christian, I don't see my people, you Christusians.
Yeah, we're the Southern Baptist.
Yeah. We have Israel.
And Israel.
Israel. With a Yahweh thrown in for good measure.
Mm.
And I have been with you wherever you have traveled. I have cut off all of your enemies, removing them from your sight. And I have made your name great, comparable to the names of the greatest on earth. Therefore, I will appoint a place for my people, Israel. I will appoint a place for my people, Israel. And I will plant them there such that they may dwell in this place of their own and never have to move again. That's called a prophecy, because Israel was in Israel when this was stated, and Dode was sitting in Jerusalem in his home on Mount Moriah. It wouldn't be long before Israel was carried off as slaves. Yes, then Judah would follow, Yehuda. So this is prophetic of a time that occurred in 1948.
That's very similar to the one when Solomon gives him. He's talking to the people presenting the temple, and he's saying, you know, when you return, and they're all there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I know.
All you got to do is read it.
You're
yeah.
You're all there.
Return. What?
And they will never have to move again. No. Future.
Okay.
Has already been fulfilled now, but it was future then. It was future for almost 3,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
Neither shall the son of evil, that is the Christian Paul, afflict them anymore, as will have been the case. Now, why would Yahweh specifically speak of the son of evil, whom Yahweh discloses that Shaul, Paul, is the son of evil, to Dode in the Mizmor. Why? Because
it's
the ultimate
Paul
fight.
Against,
yes.
Dode. Yeah.
Yes, because the Romans that became Roman Catholics have been the greatest foe to the children of Israel for the longest period of time. And so the son of evil, the Christianity as a religion, will afflict them no more, which means that Christianity will be wiped out. And since the time that I have instructed the judges in conjunction with my people, Yisrael, I have created for you a respite from all of your enemies. Moreover, Yahweh is boldly and publicly announcing for you that indeed he will act, engaging with you to create a family and home. That, my friends, is a prophecy. Because guess what? The Israelites at that moment had a home. Dode brought them in. He unified them. They had a home. And the capital of their home was Jerusalem.
Jerusalem, yeah.
There, no question about it. They had a home. And yet Yahweh was saying, boldly and publicly announcing that, he will act, engaging with you to create a family and home.
Thus,
well,
these books
guess what?
Can't be Dode written without
did not build the home of Yahweh. Solomon did.
No.
So he's not speaking of that time, but of the time that will commence here
now.
In 12 years.
And
that's
now.
What he's speaking
yes.
of. Because the family and home of Yahweh that the Israelites will never be taken out of again, that will no longer be afflicted by the son of evil, is the millennial kingdom that Yahweh will establish with Dode.
Without this knowledge of Dode, you can't bring him home. All this would be
correct.
For naught. Because
correct.
He's told you how it's going to get here. It's going to be through Dode.
They're correct.
Knowing about Dode and what his role is.
Right.
So, boy.
Yahweh never acts alone. Ever. Even during the creation account, all the work is being done by the set apart spirit.
Yeah.
So,
fair enough.
Yahweh never works alone. And the first thing he does is celebrate when he creates humans, because he created all of this to share with us. Yahweh doesn't work alone. The person he is going to reestablish Yisrael with and rid Yisrael of Christianity, the name one of many, is Dode. Surely your days, will be proclaimed and fulfilled after your relaxing rest with your fathers. Your relaxing rest. Not your death, but your relaxing rest with your fathers. Then I will rise up and take a stand to bring to fruition that which you have sown. Without hesitating or delaying, a car. Your approach to providing the way to the benefits of the relationship, Asher. Kum Zera Akar Asher. Then I will rise up and take a stand to bring to fruition what you have sown without hesitating or delaying. Your approach to providing the way to the benefits of the relationship. This shall be extracted and withdrawn, then delivered out of. This is Yatza, by the way, folks. Yatza is the term that was corrupted to become Exodus. Yatza is, I'm going to remove you from the Mitzrayim, from political and religious oppression. So this shall be extracted and withdrawn, then delivered out of. And God's the actor here, not sex. This shall be extracted and withdrawn and then delivered out of, doesn't say your seed, although that's what they said in the New Testament, out of ma'ah, a small particle of your physiological nature. Says the author of DNA. And so I will establish his reign over his kingdom. We've now made this transition.
Yes.
So we're going to see Dode in the second coming as Dode looked. And Dode was handsome. He was a beautiful man. He is going to come back flaming red hair and all. Because God extracted a piece of his DNA. And so I will establish his reign over his kingdom, announces Yahweh. I am interrupting, I should say, the flow of this prophecy regarding Dode, because I want you to appreciate something that has taken me 20 years to comprehend. You know, sometimes I think I'm the slowest in all of creation, but it's taken me 20 years to comprehend. And by the way, I make no apologies for that. It is as it should be. If you devote 8 to 10 hours a day to this, 6 days a week, you ought to grow an understanding. If you didn't grow an understanding, what would the point be? So the primary meaning of key is not when, K-Y, but instead truthfully. The verb male was scribed in the imperfect conjugation. In this particular prophecy. Surely was key. Surely was key, not when. And then your days will be proclaimed and fulfilled. That's male. It was scribed in the imperfect conjugation. Therefore, it cannot be addressing something which is over, such
Understood.
As those previous existence. It's ongoing. Instead,
yes.
In the imperfect, Malay speaks of an everlasting fulfillment, thereby addressing Dode's eternal reign as King of Kings. I just love Hebrew. It is so spectacular. If you take the time, you say, oh, how did I miss that? After Dode's relaxing intermission between the two phases of his life, with Shakab scribed in the perfect. And that, remember, it can have a long rest. It was scribed in the perfect. Guess what? That means the rest is not ongoing, that there is a finite period of time where he's going to be resting.
Mm-hmm.
He has now an infinite fulfillment, but a finite rest, indicating that the rest is now over. Yahweh was going to intervene in the course of human events to Qum et Zerah, established with Dode his sown. Zerah speaks of seeds which, when sown, take root and grow. It speaks as a metaphor for the tens of thousands of thoughtful words this man wrote on our behalf.
No joke.
As I was translating Yashaya 55, I was confronted with some terms that are callously translated rain that don't mean rain at all. And it became obvious to me that what Yahweh was saying is that I'm going to send down and pour out on behalf of my people. And the verb is yara, my source of directions and instructions, my guidance and my teaching, the verb that underlies Torah. And so I began to write and said, his words are the seeds which Yahweh expects to take root and grow when they are watered. And so then we transition from Yashaya 55 to 56, and Yahweh says, let me just explain it to you here. I want to explain it to you in the terms of I'm watering the seeds that I have planted, and there isn't any seed that I have planted that isn't going to take root and grow as I intended. And these seeds are like my words, and I have never spoken anything that was inconsistent with what I wanted or that didn't turn out as I intended. When God uses seed, you ought not be thinking of those things that you plant in the ground and grow unless it has a metaphor for words that take root and when cultivated, grow and are productive and fruitful, because that's what he's talking about. It serves as a metaphor. Yahweh is not doing this after Dode. but instead without hesitating or delaying and without equivocating. That is actually the primary meaning of a car. Look up the verbal root. You know, we have this tendency to go to a car and say, okay, a car means last, end. So, it's not such a stretch to say last end means after. Or in the case of Bakudim, let's just take it one step further and say it's the day after. But Hebrew nouns are explained through their verbal roots, the actionable root. The actionable root of a car is without hesitating, without delaying, without equivocating, without waiting. Which brought us to this very place, to this prophecy, to understanding it over the course of the past 20 years. More than anyone who has ever lived, Dode embodies the way to the benefits of the relationship. And God is going to deploy him without hesitation. Yatza is, as I shared, the operative verb of the term Exodus. It means to withdraw, to extract, and to deliver. It does not speak of a man's seed in the sense of sperm gushing out of his manhood. Equally revealing, the prophecy meaning ma'al is not viscera, but instead it describes a minute, exceedingly small particle which comprises something much larger. Particle is Dode's DNA. The second coming of Dode will be manifest not only through the return of his Nefesh soul, but also by reconstituting his DNA. This manifestation of the Messiah will not only have Dode's authority and his personality through his Nefesh and God's inspiration, but also his appearance.
That's pretty
God
cool.
Recognizes his son. The returning Messiah, Son of God and King of Kings, will be Dode. And that is why Yahweh is now speaking of him to us, telling us what they will accomplish together. The prophecy continues. He himself shall reestablish and restore a home for my name. And I will fashion and form the place of honor of his kingdom as an everlasting witness forever. I myself will be a father for him, and he shall be my son. So when that which is perverted and twisted is associated with him, I will correctly reciprocate and argue on his behalf, deciding with him to chastise with the scepter of this man, and by assaulting so as to end the lives of the children of Adam. Then my steadfast love and enduring mercy shall not be taken away from him in the manner that I rejected being associated with Shaul, whom to show the way to the benefits of the relationship I removed, abolishing before your appearance. Moreover, your house, we're back to speaking directly to Dode after he's made the most profound statement that you will find anywhere. Moreover, your house will remain established, verified, and true, and your kingdom and reign will exist forever as an eternal witness in association with my presence. Your throne and place of honor shall exist and be established forevermore. Consistent with all of these words and everything in this revelation, Nathan correctly conveyed them to Dode. It begins and ends with Dode. I mean, that is so profound. It is so incredibly insightful, so pertinent to what's going to happen. And when you know Yahweh's love for this man and what he's going to achieve from this man, it changes everything. I mean, I'm now a year and a half into the rewrites. I've got another year to go. And it is, it's not a burden, it may be for those who are editing these books, but I think even they're enjoying them.
No,
I get all sorts of feedback from Mike and from JK and from Molly and from, of course, Jackie. So I think they are really enjoying because we're learning so much. But this rewrite is because when I was writing observations is when we tackled this this prophecy again. And I began to say, whoa, this is about Dode all the way through.
Yeah.
And then we transitioned from that into, we were doing Isaiah, Yeshayah, and we realized, wait a minute, Isaiah 9:6-7, they're not speaking of Jesus, speaking about Dode again. And then we transitioned out of all of the Yeshayah's proclamations about Dode into the Mizmor, and we've got God saying to Dode, you're going to return as God. You're returning as brilliant as the sun. You are my son. I am your father. I'm anointing you as the Mashiach. And so now we realize that the root of replacement theology and the basis of Christianity started right here in Acts 2 with Dode being dead and buried by the authors of the Christian New Testament so that they could deliberately confiscate everything that God said about this man and create this edifice of Jesus Christ based on the promises that God made to Dode. That's the very basis of it. And so once we came to realize that, we had to start all over. We had to go right back to the beginning and correct the record and correctly position Dode as God has conveyed him to us. And I know that when I started with the Mizmor and began to share a bromance, my budding bromance with Dode.
Yeah.
By the way, I'm not alone. There's a lot of us out there.
Yeah.
They're going to have a romance.
Oh, yeah,
there's going to be a lot of women out there. They're going to have a romance. This is the ultimate human being. This is the fact that he's flawed. He's the flawed rascal. He's going to be far better than Harrison Ford in either Indiana Jones or as Han Solo. He's the ultimate hero. He is imperfect and yet courageous, a man of tremendous character. He's brilliant and yet he's not only a great orator, but a great singer. He is a courageous man that defends his people. So we began to realize just how important Dode was and that once we understand what it was about this man that caused God to love him so, it shaped our understanding of what God's trying to achieve in the covenant, what we should be like if we want to be appreciated by God and used by God, as he used this man. And then now to read in Yeshayah, and to a large degree, Yeshayah exists to tell the story of Dode. And as we read it, we realize that God is going to do for us as he did for him.
And
so
I
it's
remember,
really important to know what he did for him. Yes, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. No, I remember when a couple of years ago when we were doing shows and stuff and that all came to fruition. And it upset so many people. And I'm going, why are you upset about this? This is like, wow, this is a dream come true. It makes everything work.
Oh, it makes everything work because they couldn't give up their precious Lord Jesus.
Yeah, honest to
and
goodness.
And so
it was like, come on,
just
people.
So much of the Christian life.
You have Yahweh.
First they couldn't
give
up Paul, and then they couldn't give up Jesus. And folks, Yosha is not the Messiah. He is not the Son of God. Passover lamb. That's it.
That He didn't write down a big deal, and that's what it was.
Not a single prophecy that mentions his name. Not one that mentions Joshua's name.
Clue.
Not one. Yeah. There's not a single word that was written by him in any language, much less something, a legacy in Hebrew. And look at, would you compare that to Dode with these magnificent Mizmor Psalms, the Proverbs, and all of this material that's in shared for us throughout the prophets, you know, beginning in Shamuel, but running all the way through to the very end. He's the central figure in all of our history and the redemptive story of Yahweh, as is with this man, so with his people, as with this man, so with the children of the covenant. And so it's really instructive for us to say, what did he say? He himself shall reestablish and restore a home for my name. So guess what? There's going to be a home for Yahweh's name in us too. Because as with Job, so with us. And I will fashion and form the place of honor of his kingdom as an eternal witness forever. Now, I don't see us as having a kingdom, but by being God's children, we become royalty. And we do get to on Yahweh's throne. And while I don't like the responsibility that Dode has, this true is being offered to us. That Yahweh is creating a place of honor for us. And that his eternal witness will endure within us. And our souls become his home. I myself will be a father to him, and he shall be my son. The same is true for us. Yahweh is our father. We are his children.
Internalize it.
So when that which is perverted and twisted is associated with him, Christianity, right here, Acts 2, Paul's letters. When that which is perverted and twisted is associated with him, the basis of replacement theology, which is the basement of the Christian religion, I will reciprocate and I will argue on his behalf. Deciding with him to chastise with the scepter of this man. The scepter is the right to rule of this man. And by assaulting to end the lives of the children of Adam. Going to wipe them out. If you're a Christian and you survive to this day, Dode and Yahweh are going to extinguish your life, ridding the future millennial kingdom of the toxin of your life.
Yes, right.
Then my steadfast love and enduring mercy shall not be taken away from him in the manner that I rejected it and being associated with Shaul. I was wrong. There actually are five names in this story, not just Yahweh's name, not just Israel is mentioned throughout this as God's people, and the villain is Shaul.
Anti-Torah Shaul.
Whom to show the way to the benefits of the relationship, I will remove, abolishing before your appearance. Moreover, your house will remain established, verified, and true, and your kingdom and reign will exist forever as an eternal witness in association with my presence. Your throne and your place of honor shall exist and be established forevermore. Consistent with all of these words and everything within this revelation, Nathan correctly conveyed them to Dode. So that's what they missed. They took this stirring, inspiring, uplifting, life-altering prophecy that God conveyed about his son, the man he loves most of all, the man he respects and enjoys most of all, and they buried him. Killed him and buried him. Oh, and they did it using a prophecy that was the most uplifting of Yahweh's relationship with this man.
I mean, isn't it?
And the prophecy, rather than speaking of the birth of Christianity, speaks of its death.
Yeah, then you had. Stick that in your head, as they say.
And this is Acts 2. Listen, if Acts 2, which is, you know, still Yosha's disciples, if it's this dead-ass wrong, what's left? And not, there's
well,
no if. Since it is this wrong, there is nothing left that you could say is even remotely credible. And as obvious as this is, how in the hell is it that in 2,000 years, there's not a single Christian cleric that says, wait a minute, Dode wasn't the prophet here. He didn't speak about a Christo. Dode's not dead. What in the hell are they talking about here? None of this is true. Why isn't there a single Christian with the intellect and character to say this is a lie? The same reason that the community of scientists couldn't say it came from the Wuhan Virology Institute. Stupid. You know, religion is groupthink. Politics is groupthink. And the gang mentality of man is a horrible beast. So here we are, easily one of the most profoundly revealing prophecies of all time. It's near and dear to my heart because it is the only reason we're here. We wouldn't be here without this prophecy. And it's near and dear to me because of how I have translated this for every book series thus far, and each time have managed to grow and an understanding. And I had thought two times ago, I was jubilant saying, oh, I get it. Wow, this is so profound. And what I thought was true, and it was exciting. And then I remember translating it again and coming home and saying, oh, wow. I thought it was profound before. Now it's even more magnificent. And then I'm rewriting the Yada Yah series, and I translate it again. I'm saying, oh, goodness. How did I miss that? Look how much more exciting this is, how much clearer this is that the only subject being discussed here is Dode. And then after I am having to finish the Bakudim chapter and learn about a car and its verbal root, I come at it again and you know, the glasses come off the forehead and drop to the floor and along with the jaw, and you say, how did I miss this? This is so uplifting, so profound, so relevant to our lives, so central to God's story and his covenant and his plan and what's going to happen in the near future. So what a wonderful gift to have the first passage we're drawn to. Take this for such
a ride. That's pretty profound right there. That you're from there to there, you'd probably be the last one that we utter.
Yeah.
So I want to go through it. Now I really want to go through every word there and see what's there. Wow.
Well, this present translation present translation is in the seventh chapter. I know I wrote it for the Teruah. There's three chapters on Teruah and volume 5 of Yada Yahweh, which is Moed appointments. And so this chapter that we're sharing from right now, that's what it was written for. But it became so profoundly appropriate because of two things. One is the condemnation of Luke's loyalty to Paul and the corrupt story that he was telling, that it just had to be added to volume 4 of that. But also because there's a reason that Tiawa is arguing against the father of lies, the reason that the son of evil, the reason that he is specifically named Shaul as the adversary that he's going to be attacking, has been the greatest foe in the history of Yahweh's people, Israel, the Roman Catholic Church, and Christianity thereafter. And so the way that our review of that material ends is by citing and accurately translating what Yahweh says that was misappropriated. And what we find is that in the end, it actually concludes not with a condemnation of Christianity, which has already been destroyed by this point. It ends by condemning Judaism. And so what God is ultimately saying is, yes, Christianity has been a satanic menace to my people. I'm going to wipe them out. But the biggest foe of all to my people hasn't been an outside influence. It's not Christianity. It's not Islam. It's not socialist secular humanism and the progressives and academia and the media. The biggest foe to Israel has been for the last 2,000 years, rabbis. Mm-hmm. It is Judaism. You know, the rabbis would tell you that you can't even be Jewish unless you are practicing the Jewish religion. And yet being Jewish is an ethnicity. And God clearly denounces Judaism as being the single greatest foe to the ethnicity of Yehuda and Israel. So the way that it ends, actually says, okay, yeah, Christianity, very, very bad. And here it is proven that it is built on a false foundation. But that's not your greatest foe. If you're going to come home to me, the people that you need to renounce are the rabbis. And God systematically just says, this is what they've done to you. So why, after all of this, do you still trust them and not trust me? Good question. And we're going to get to that, because this is the chapter that will take us there. We've got a lot more material to go. And Kirk, I want to try to get through the end of this chapter, but you know, the difficult thing is that tonight, one of the most profoundly important translations I've ever done, Yashaya 55, over this last few days, and he said, how could you not want to share that? But if we jump ahead to that, you know, then we'll keep on going there.
All this material behind.
I know. And so
it's tough, isn't it?
There's just so much great material. Yeah, you'll never run out of the longest running story of in human history. Yeah, was revelation to his people. And we get a front row seat because he's retelling his story.
We do.
Through us, so we have this front row seat.
A trip.
Yeah, and God actually explains why he's telling this story through us.
We know his market.
And the fact is that his people have a propensity not to listen to it. And it's largely the fault of the rabbis. So we're going to do all we can to discredit them, and in very harsh terms, so that the 80% of Israelites who are only modestly religious or not religious at all might be open to Yahweh's calling. So we're doing it for you, even though there's not many of you listening now. Are coming very close to
pressure does a wonderful thing.
Wonderful
thing. It pushes you in the corner.
Look at Yahweh's metaphors. They are grain, they are olive oil, and it is wine, and they all have one thing in common, that grapes and grain And olives must be crushed. They must be put under pressure before they are useful. And so, Yisrael, you have been equated to these things: the grape, the vineyard, the standing grain, and also the olive. And so, that is the nature of the time of Jacob's troubles. It's a time of great pressure and testing and crushing that will lead to the most exquisite wine, the most beautiful of all anointing oils, and bread that is sublime. Well, may Yahweh bless. We look forward to being with you next week. I guess I'm not going to apologize for being on a rant, because time is short, and God wants us to awaken his people, wants us to share this message with the world. He wants us to get people's attention. And so this is a message that we are deeply passionate about, because God is deeply passionate about it.
Yeah. Don't apologize for nothing. You're doing great.
That's right. Now, we do want to do a program on the Apostles' Creed. I don't want to start it now because we're
It can fit anywhere you want to buy.
But we, I know you did an analysis on Articles of Faith and the Apostles' Creed, which, by the way, had nothing to do with the apostles, because it was written in around 330 and Eusebius, and it had, of course, bury the Arians, who knew enough to know they were making
that
a god out of a man, and that probably was a bad idea. But we'll go through it, because I'm sure we'll have fun with it.
Okay.
All right. May Yah bless one and all, and we look forward to being with you this time next week.
Shabbat shalom.
Yeah, what would you like me to dig up on the rabbi?